Down to brass tacks.
Hi, David. Good evening.
Hi, how are you?
Not bad. I just want to query something here, and I want to change the whole concept of the program slightly. It's a sporting matter, but it relates to one of your programs on your station, Mason and Guest. I just heard a promo on it just recently. I just want to find out from you, first of all, is it a calling program or is it a talk? Is it a cricket show that just can talk, as far as you know?
Well, I think it is largely driven by a panel with an element of call-in.
Uh-huh.
So it has both features.
It has both features.
But yes.
I will say to you that from the call-in perspective, that is a non-existent situation in respect, right? And one has to really look at the whole concept of the program in terms of every Tuesday evening, one tend to get, if you go back and check, there's a particular set of people that's supposed to be on the program that I believe as though that only there have been playing test cricket or cricket. Barbados, as far as I know, has more test players than any Caribbean country in the Caribbean. And yet still, there's only one Barbadian you hear on a regular basis, that may be Ian Bradshaw. Now, there are other topics in terms of, and that is important. Courtney Brown just had an accident a few months ago, and I have not heard a connection to Courtney to say, well, what's going on with you? How are you recovering? And, I mean, we're tired of hearing one set of people over and over and over every Tuesday. And then when it comes down to the fact now, it comes over to me as a listener that the host seemed to have a exciting part of his ego to be happy about what happens. Because, I mean, Clive Lloyd and Andy Roberts, yeah, we recognize them as icons and legends in West Indies cricket. But Barbados has more test players than any Caribbean country. Why is it we have not been having a discourse from our players to find out exactly what's going on?
I hear your criticism, and I think that the person who produces the program would have to listen to what you're saying and weigh the extent to which there is any validity in the complaint that you're making. I could appreciate that there's a need for diversity of views and that sort of thing. And it is reasonable to raise the question of how much more can we get out of this process. Having said that, though, I really think that this is one of our flagship programs on Voice of Barbados. And there is a lot of mileage that we get out of it. This program is clearly being listened to across the region. We get regular situations where other organizations, news organizations, quote the program. And I am really very happy with that aspect of it. But like anything else, there's a need to refine it, reform it from time to time. And, we have to take criticism from time to time and try to work with it, So I hear what you're saying, and I...
Yeah, because I will tell you that I do read Caribbean papers, and definitely when you go to clips in the sports section in the Caribbean papers, especially the Express or whatever, you see this was quoted on Mason and Guest.
Precisely.
Blah, blah, blah. I will acknowledge that. That's a fact.
So
right?
All we got to do now is try to work with the foundation that we've had and to make it even better. And that's what we are striving for. But from my vantage point, I have been very, very impressed with the kind of mileage that we get out of Mason and Guess. And to congratulate Andrew Mason on the effort that he makes. I mean, one of the significant things that may go unnoticed for you, but I noticed it, is the fact that today, and since yesterday, you would have been hearing the promo that says, what's coming Tuesday? So,
yeah,
and
specific. Yeah, we heard the promo. It was only a matter of seconds, so I heard the promo, but I said to you, you hear the promo, but you're seeing people over and over all the time.
Understood. And I think that needs to be looked at. All right?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks.
Good afternoon, David.
Yes, sir. How are you?
I'm pretty good. David,
Yes.
Listen, man, that guy take his hands off Andrew Mason's program. It is indeed the best program on radio.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that we don't need to make some changes from time to time.
Listen, I am amazed at the type of person Andrew has managed to get on that program. Prime ministers, I mean, all walks of, let me pay for all walks of life. Mm-hmm. It's a fantastic program.
Yeah.
All you could love program now is happy even more. Okay?
Yes.
Apart from that program, I also like the doctor program on Sundays.
Okay.
Now, there's three things I want to mention to you, and I'll be very quick because I don't have enough time. I've got to get back out and do some work. Now, I want to first speak to you about black business and the regularity of the times that I hear people come on this program condemning. I mean, they always blame white people for their downfall as far as black business is concerned. And David, there's only one place you could go to find out the reasons why we get this constant call of black people coming on your Bastards program, complaining about they're not being able to get contracts or black businesses being destroyed by whites and so on. There's a bank, the Barbados Development Bank, David. If you could get some of the records, get someone to send you some of the previous records, the Barbados Development Bank, and you will see indeed the reason why a lot of these black businesses fail. And these people who come on the program complaining about black business and white people destroy their business, they also need to come and tell the truth.
I haven't heard people on the program saying that white people destroy their businesses. I haven't heard that here today.
Yeah. Not today, but there's a constant call all the time. I hear this people, black business and white people and so on. And I take strong objections to the wordings when they speak about black business and white people and so on. Because these Barbados Development Bank records will show you why a lot of these black businesses fail. Why we don't hear people like from Exclusive Lightning complaining about their problems concerning white people or their businesses. That a business that all black people who keep a noise about white people destroying business, they should look at that as an example. That's run by a black person, a black-owned business, David. And you don't hear those people like that Exclusive Lightning complaining. And there's other businesses controlled by black people like that.
I just want you to recognize, I'm not saying it of Exclusive Lighting, but there are a lot of people. Recently, when Brankers folded, I mean, Brankers was, to a large extent, it has been seen as one of the companies that has been an inspiration to many business people over the years. But coming out of that, you get to understand how many other businesses in this country are really on the brink, you know. You can never sit down here and be confident that there is this great success. Look, right now, we've had companies that have been through essentially 12 years of drought. Financial drought. And now, on top of that, there's COVID too.
I understand that.
So these companies have had to absorb so many blows over time. And, you know, many of them can go no further. So all that glitters is not necessarily gold.
But I will come to that, David, to be honest with you. I went just about 2 weeks ago, I went into Cape Shepherd, okay? Mm. And I was dumbfounded, David, with what I saw in there. I told myself, listen, I believe this will be shot within the next 2 weeks because it was a virtual ghost town. And that's not owned by white people too, David. And I could understand, though, they're also going through a serious, serious drought.
But the truth of the matter is that some of the people that I've spoken to, because I've had to do projects over the years that looked at, I remember doing a project years ago called The Taste of Achievement. And what that project did was to go to business people who had basically pulled themselves up by by their bootstraps, you know, and the degree to which the white businesses relied upon family, especially, to help them start the businesses was significantly greater than what was happening among the black-owned businesses. The black-owned businesses were reliant more on the commercial banks and stuff to help them get there. But even among your family, there is not that kind of cooperation and commitment. And there's always, unfortunately, there's too much jealousy among people in, you know, when it comes to things like that, and a lack of trust. So where did that come from? That's something that is ingrained in our psyche.
Well, that even happened within the furniture sector, the manufacturers as well.
The furniture problem was a different. The furniture problem has a lot to do with.
No. When you say lack of trust,
yes,
that also was tantamount to the downfall, merely to the furniture manufacturers as well.
Mm-hmm.
They can trust their one out of their way.
Right. So for us, part of the way forward must be to address the way that you see yourself. This is the same problem that the young men on the street have, you know. We don't see ourselves in a positive light. That's why we think we could just snuff out a life just so. It does not matter, you know, because I'm nobody and you're nobody. I'm greater than you, even though I am nobody, so I can take you out, all right? And this plays out not only on the street, but it plays out in business as well.
I'll tell you before you go to my other point there, right? Mm-hmm. One of these same black businesses changed names about four different times, and there had to be a specific reason why they had to do that. Four different times. You understand what I'm saying to you?
Mm-hmm.
Four different times they had a name change. Now, let me go to my other point. Now, we're talking about the Auditor General report. Now, I find it absolutely strange that we have this definite silence coming from Verla De Pisa. I want to hear her concern the Auditor General report. That's what I want to hear coming from her and within the Democrat Labour Party as well. Because I can remember clearly they had a fellow who planned to be a candidate or who said he would be a candidate for the next general election with the Democrat Labour Party. He was all over St. John taking petitions to forward to the Barbados Sports Authority. So I would like that goodly gentleman now to go back to the same people who signed those petitions, ask them to read the standard yesterday, Sunday Sun, and indeed the Friday Sun, and see exactly the reasons why they are not getting potable water at the present moment in St. John. So I hope they pick up my advice and go and speak to the people in St. John, and I honestly believe the same people who read the paper yesterday, who live in St. John, would then see why they didn't get any water. My another point before I close. Now, you're talking about political hamper. Some guy talking about he did not get a political hamper. You remember that guy, David?
Yeah.
And you mentioned about politicians?
Yeah.
You know the reason this why the people go through this sort of challenges as far as politicians is concerned, David?
Tell me.
I tell you because it's something I witnessed out there on the ground. It would go to tell them whenever they see politicians canvassing, just keep quiet and do not abuse politicians. I'm not saying that you should victimize people, but some of these people here, who you hear quarreling and cussing politicians now for hampers, they are the same people who are telling the politicians during the election campaign, don't come around them. They don't want to see them. I'm not saying that you should use that to victimize people. But that is the problem you're getting out. And that's why I always say you have to be very careful during election campaigns. I witness it for myself as a canvasser.
This person.
That's what I'm going on the ground.
Okay. Thank you very much. This person says that they live near the clinic, the polyclinic in Warrens. And you got to see the ZR conductors blocking the road, running from side to side, some without masks, and holding people's hands and carrying them to the van. I hope they have hand sanitizer in the van, says the writer. Down to brass tacks.
Good afternoon, David.
Yes, sir. Good afternoon.
David, how are you doing?
I'm okay.
David, I attempted to call the program about 3 weeks ago, but I was quite pleasantly surprised just now to hear Trevor Clark speaking of Mason and Guest. And Trevor might be right in some of the specs that he's speaking of with Barbadian cricketers who are legends or icons, which word we want to use with them, not making contributions to the Andrews program. But I think I'm pretty close with a number of Barbadian cricketers, West Indian players, who have distanced themselves from that particular program because one or two of the guys tell me the program is like dumplings in the stew. You could utilize Tuesday evening to bring back Marvin Manning and those people, so I can understand how they feel. But when you look at what Trevor was saying, I mean, this season, 2019 to 2020, regional first-class season, Barbados was made the champions because of the COVID-19 and what's not. And there were three particular players that had gone unnoticed to all of Barbados. And it would be the first time in a long, long, long time that we would have produced two young fast bowlers that both of them would have had over 34 wickets in the regional competition. You would have to go back to the days of Malcolm Marshall and Joe Garner to look for something like that happening. And these guys were not even brought to the program. There was a young Barbadian player playing for Barbados for the first time. He was connected to the Windward Islands team for about 2 years. He came out with almost 600 runs, and these guys now are in the West Indies. And what Trevor is trying to say, or I think what Trevor is trying to put over, that here's where we have Barbadian cricketers who are performing.
I got Andrew Mason on the line, and I think I should put him on. Because one of the concerns that I must reflect here is that this program has essentially become a regional program. And in that context, therefore, you still, while you need to give expression to Barbadian talent, at the same time, you got to be careful that you don't push it into too much of a parochial slant. Now, another concern that I have here overall, we need to be. Let me bring Andrew Mason in.
No problem at all.
Andrew?
Hello, how are you, David?
I'm well.
How are you, Smiley?
Hi, I'm good, Andrew.
What's your response to this?
But first of all, I try very hard to get people from Barbados to come in the program. And the reality is, David, that there's a problem. I can get quite comfortably people from across the region to come.
Yes.
And my very good friend earlier, Trevor Clark, made the point that he does not hear a lot of former cricketers from Barbados. But, you know, when you call them, most of them say they're not going to come on the program. So what do I do in that instance, David?
I understand that point. I was about to say that just now, because I also have come to the conclusion that there are a lot of people in this country who are thin-skinned. They can't take criticism. And a lot of the people in sports, the people who are Calypsonians and stuff, oh my goodness, they could share more licks than anybody else. They know what's wrong with everybody else. But the minute that you put their performance under scrutiny, they just go into a shell. So that limits the number of people that will be available to come forward and sit down and talk about the issues. So it is a problem that I recognize exists. So I suspect, and you would have to concede this, Andrew, the style that you bring to the program may scare some of them.
Well, that could be possible too. But I'll tell you this. I've tried all the test cricketers. And Ian Bradshaw is the only one that will consistently say to me, look, Andrew, I'm a little bit busy, but I recognize the importance of coming to the show, and I will come to the show. We've had Prof Edwards. We had one of the best shows perhaps ever on this, and yes, we had the right exit for Gareth and Sobers. You came into the studio, but we had the mighty star on the line calling from New York. We had Emil Straker. We had Sir Clive Lloyd. You know, and the other thing about the show too, Smiley, is that people talk about freshness. In the last couple of programs, we found Cameron Coffey that we have not heard from in over 10 years.
But David, can I make a point?
Yes, let me hear the point you're going to make.
Andrew, do not stray away from what David is saying. You probably, as the host, are scaring away some of these cricketers, some of these Barbadians.
All right, but let me say this.
Hold on.
I remember when Tony Kozier was doing commentary. And the minute that you had to say something that was unflattering about performance, the players decide that they're going to gang up against you. They ain't talking to you and all sorts of nonsense.
Exactly. We've
been through that. So, if you want to accept that, yes, that's his style. But his style has also worked for him. It hasn't worked against him, or, you know, right through and through. It has worked for him. So this thing about trying to come and tell a man how he is supposed to do the thing, I accept criticism to a point. But we got to be realistic about how difficult it is when you're dealing
very
with
difficult.
Sports personalities. It is not easy.
Very difficult. And I'll say this to you, Smiley. You talk about the Barbadian players, right, that are on the rest of the side. I try to get all of them.
Say it to the Brastat listeners, not Smiley Bailey. Say it to
no,
the Brastat
okay,
listeners.
I'm sorry about that. I'm saying to you, Smiley, that an attempt was made to get the Barbadian. In fact, I'll say this to you, that on the show tomorrow, Floyd Reaper, who has now been appointed as the batting coach for this tour, I have an exclusive with him tomorrow. I called him, he recognized the importance of it, and he's going to be on the show.
All right.
And the show is also very easy.
We're gonna wrap this one up. You all can take this into, this is the appetizer for tomorrow's show. I'm sure that, you know, Smiley, you're gonna be part of it. Are you
no,
scared?
I won't be a part of it.
You're scared of it too.
No.
Thank you, David.
I gotta go.
My final comment, right?
Yes.
Is that they all listen? They all listen.
All right. Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks. Hello.
Miss Ellis.
Yes, sir.
A blessed day to you, sir.
A blessed day to you, too.
Thank you kindly. I trust that your weekend was a good one. And I wish you and the station and the workers and the whole Barbados a very blessed week,
yes.
You know, because we all need the best for our country. There are some troubling things that we all ought to be very concerned about. Only this morning, I called a business place, and the lady said to me, "Are you calling the program today?" I said, "You sure it's me?" She said, "Yes." And she said to me, "I want you to mention something for me." I said, "What is that?" She said, "I want you to mention and talk about the two deputy commissioners of police." I said to her, "Well, I mentioned that some time ago, and I discussed that." She said, "Well, I want you to mention it again because," she says, "she's concerned in that the Attorney General admitted that he have to go back to Parliament to discuss this matter, and yet our Prime Minister had said during a speech that she was making, that she had made some time ago, and said that everything was okay and that it had been laid before the Parliament already, and a newspaper columnist had said that when he checked Parliament, the documents, it was not laid in Parliament."
So I don't think it wasn't debated in Parliament.
Right, but so
it was laid but not debated.
Right. And she said she was concerned about that our Prime Minister would say this to us, and yet it was not the fact. See, so she said that people usually mention and talk about things that please them. See, so I hope if she is hearing me now, that she would hear that I have mentioned it as well, you know, because we need to be concerned about these matters. And I remember when I talked to you some time ago, you said these things sometimes are nine-day wonder and all of that. But I remember as well that when Mr. Stewart did say that there wasn't going to be any layoff, when it had to happen, then people railed on him and said all kinds of things. So these are things that we must be aware of, that when our leaders say things, that we are all listening to what they say, you know? Now, you want to say something?
No.
About that?
No.
Pardon?
No.
No, okay. Now, I was only there last week, because it's a new week. When I was meditating, I thought of Mr. with this thing that took place in the States. I said to myself, I have not heard Mr. Commerchong commenting on it. I said, I wonder why. But I was pleased to hear, I think today's Monday, either Friday or Thursday, there last week, that he did speak about it. And I was really pleased about that, you know. And then I think he spoke yesterday and he mentioned about the police treatment to those marchers up there. And I thought to myself, I want to compliment him on his stand in that. The thing that I was concerned about as well is that I have not heard Mr. Trevor Prescott saying one single word, because he is very ardent supporter as far as black persons is concerned for these matters. But I have not heard a single word from him. I don't know if you'll hear it soon or later, but I didn't hear anything about him in support of Mr. Denny and the marches and so on, what is taking place in the state. And these are things that I am concerned about, because then you can't be doing it one way at one time and then the next time you're not doing it. Either you're standing for something or you're not standing for it. Now, let me say here as well, you want me to comment on that?
You know, there are so many people in the country that can be asked to comment. You go and single out only, in particular, you've gone for Mr. Prescott. But, you know.
No, well, I'll tell you, as I said, why I mention him, I know he's very strident in his comments about these kind of matters. He doesn't hide his mouth, and he just expresses himself with these matters because then he stands for what.
So you know where he stands on the issue already then?
No, no, but not on this one, because I haven't heard him. But where's not a single word, you see? So that's why I said I'm concerned about that. Okay. Now, let me say here to you that I was thinking in terms of, I thought that these bonds were, it was a good thing. But then when I began to meditate on it, I asked myself, if at the end of the 4 years or before the 4 years is finished, if there will be another attempt or will it will be mentioned to the workers in Barbados to convert these shares into some equity in some government entity, in that the government would say that they don't have the money to pay them now, but rather than do that, you can now become part owners in these things. And this concerns me, because why I'm saying it concerns me, when our government, and especially now that the economy is going through what it's going through, and there's going to be a downturn of 4%, 4.something% downturn as far as growth is concerned. I'm asking myself, if our government will not come up later on with some other instrument to avoid paying this money, because then this has to be paid back at the end of the 4 years, as they say. And I'm
seeking to cast doubt on the credibility of what the government has said about the bonds.
Ellis, reality is in
the government. You trying to stop people from buying the bonds?
No, no, no. Remember, I said
secure tactics.
No, no. Look, you see, you were trying to.
But that's what you're doing. You're trying you're trying to put a spanner in the works in Europe.
But you know what?
Very sophisticated way.
I like when people oppose me and attack me. You know why? I'll tell you why. Tells me that I'm on the right track. and I'm exporting what they don't want the public to hear. You must face reality.
Yeah.
That in the present environment that we have, you cannot tell people or give any people any assurance for these things. When you've already...
For all the years that we have had bonds and government paper, I suppose we have all lived with our reality. Things can happen, things can change. But on the current trajectory, basically, the government says we are on a foundation at the moment that does not indicate that you have to be worried about that. Therefore, you can move forward with confidence, because confidence is the key.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes, sir.
When our government had used three different principal things for this cutting in salary, I call it, you know, it has to be, it's cutting in salary. They came up with the forced salary thing first.
Forced savings.
Then they came with what I want to compliment this government as far as record is concerned. They're the first time in history that I know of that any government anywhere in the world has come up with a national meeting term. It's a record.
There's no national meeting term.
Did you not hear them talk that?
What I noted more than you was that the government came up with ideas and then took the ideas to the trade union movement and the business community and had these ideas refined to create what we have. And I mean, I would think that's the way you want to run business. You don't want to come with your idea and just put it on the table and say you can take this or leave it, like it or lump it.
But this is what they've just done.
That is not my interpretation of what has happened.
Mr. Ellis, you can't be serious.
No, I am serious.
Look, if you just tell people, I mean, Mr. Ellis, you really can't be serious. You're saying it because you want to hear me. Look, if you are going to ascribe and assign shares to people's salary and say to them that if you don't want it, the central bank will buy it. For God's sake, you must not say things like this. When you have just done that to people and then say to them if you don't want them to transfer, it means that it is a compulsory take back and given. Come on, don't say things like that.
My friend, you know full
like,
well.
When you could do something like
you this. You know full well that it has that been explained time and time again that if people don't want it, they can opt out of it.
Mr. Ellis, you see,
and that is at the end of the day.
No, you see,
that is important.
You see, you are confirming what I just said. That you have.
But we went through that already.
But then don't say.
We have already gone through that, and we've looked at that element of it that is essentially compulsory, but that you have the option of coming out of it so that you will get your, as I explained by the government, you get your salary from 2 points.
Then don't say what you have said.
Yeah, but if at the end of the day you can come out of it, isn't that optional?
Mr. Ed, you can only come up with something that you have gone into.
Oh, dear.
The people didn't go into it. The government has ascribed that to their salary, cutting their salaries.
Yeah, but if at the end of the process you will still get your cash, one set from government and the next set from the Central Bank of Barbados, that is what matters to the person at the end.
It does matter.
It does.
Because you've taken away the rights from the people.
Well, in those circumstances, you know, hold on a minute. It's simple. If you know, the law courts are there for things like this, you know. If people feel that their rights, the constitutional rights, have been infringed, they go to court.
You see where you're going? You see where you're going? You know what you're doing now? You are saying that they're right. The government is right. They can do what they like.
I didn't.
I am surprised you're
getting so flustered today that you really put in words in my mouth.
No, I never said so. I'm surprised that you would take that stand.
But I can only take the stance that has been outlined by the government. I'm telling you, this is what has been said. And at the end of it all, if people feel the way that you do, then they have recourse to the courts to deal with it if they feel that it's unconstitutional.
I'm wavering in my thoughts as far as even if I had to, if it the opportunity was given to the public to buy a share.
What would you do with the money instead?
Which money?
That you got.
If I had it, I will invest it in something that I...
Like what?
I'm certain about.
Like what?
Well, I can't tell you that.
Precisely, because that is the problem. Look. I spoke to somebody this weekend who said their criticism was, why did the government have to offer 5% interest? You can't get that anywhere but here. The government could easily have raised that money offering 2 and 2.5%, because you can't put it on the bank, and you got to pay the bank now to hold your money. And where are these other opportunities? That is what causes so many people to say, look, in these circumstances, I will take it because I can't get it anywhere else.
You are speaking as though I'm saying to people don't go and take them. I'm telling you. I'm telling you what I mean. Huh?
But you're using yourself as an example of somebody who is skeptical because this thing is being promoted, but that ultimately the government is likely to find itself in a situation where it has to renege on the promises that has been made. That's what you're saying.
Well, listen to me.
It's possible, but in the current environment, when you are not getting, well, you get the small percentage interest that you're getting on your money in the commercial banks, which are then savaged by the fees that they are placing on you. Is that what you're going to do? I suppose you put it in the credit union, right?
You should say I got a living credit union because I can go and get it whenever I want it.
But you would avoid getting 5% on bonds.
But I will get it. I will sure I got it. That I can go and get it when I want it, though. Because then right now, there's no guarantee that anybody's gonna buy it from me.
To get the bonds in 5 years' time. To get the maturity of the bonds in 4 years' time, you would turn your back on that?
I'll tell you this.
Yes or no?
That when I have my grandma that have had to go back on things they've done so many times, they have not really built my confidence. It changes so many times.
I asked you a question. You would resist the whole idea of buying bonds at 5% interest, maturing in 4 years?
I would resist what they have done to me. They have not given me a choice. That is what I'm resisting.
You are in the private sector now. You're not a public servant. If you had to register, you could go and register with the central bank and buy bonds that are rejected by a public servant and benefit in that way. You wouldn't do that?
I bought a few shares during the last government. I did.
You're trying to duck. You wouldn't buy bonds. Anyhow. Up to you. That is up to you.
Yes, of course. But Mr. Ellis, when you've had your confidence have been so shit, you know, people in Barbados, including you, might only talk about your confidence was shattered during the last government and so on, but things that are happening now, you would say you have not been shattered. When you can do something like what has been happening here now, how could you not say that persons have a reason to doubt and to hold back and to withdraw?
Well, as I said to you, the driving force behind this is, where else can you get that return? If you can get that return elsewhere, you will go elsewhere.